as a wholesaler, you're not close enough to the end result to get that fulfillment and the reward. On the advisor side, it's one of the great parts about the job that you get to see very closely the impact that you're having.
Welcome to the Active Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Harbor Capital. Join us as we learn from pros who have helped thousands of investors live better lives. I'm Brian Moore, and I'll be chatting with some of the brightest minds in the financial advisory business, bringing you insights on practice management and investment research that works for advisors and their clients.
Joining me today on this episode of the Active Advisor Podcast is Anthony Zanetti. Anthony is a partner and financial consultant at Martin Capital Group and brings a wealth of knowledge and perspectives with a rich background spanning 15 years in the financial services industry. Anthony's journey includes building his own wealth management practice and serving as a branch manager at Ameriprise, to his time in Texas with Eaton Vance, where he collaborated with financial advisors and clients to construct comprehensive individualized portfolios. Today at Martin Capital Group, Anthony remains passionate about simplifying and organizing his clients' financial lives while emphasizing the value of lasting client relationships across generations. Outside of the office, Anthony serves on the board of directors for the Seacoast Community School and can be found enjoying the outdoors with his wife and two young children in the great state of New Hampshire. Welcome, Anthony, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brian. This should be fun.
It is going to be fun. I know it's Friday. We're going to have a blast. Okay, now to get the conversation started, we typically like to start by asking, what's the first memory you have related to money or investing?
So I have several. My parents talked pretty openly about money with my brother and I. I don't know if it was a conscious choice, but I played hockey my whole life and into college for a mediocre school. But hockey equipment was a big deal when you were young. So I was looking up to the high school and college and pro guys and obviously wanted to be wearing the same stuff that they were wearing. So when it came time to shop for hockey equipment at ages where you're growing out of it, basically every 6 months, my dad would say, these are the skates that I'm willing to buy. If you want to buy those skates, you can pay the difference. And it taught me to analyze if that was worth it to me. And I basically ended up making the choice that, no, well, let's go with the skates that you're going to buy. So I think at a young age, I learned the value of money, especially the value of my own money, my parents' money, and just what was worth kind of paying up for.
No, it's actually a great learning experience. And I'm sure one that both your parents enjoyed watching you kind of figure out on your own and knew was going to teach lifelong lessons as well.
Exactly.
We can hit the fast forward button just a little bit. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your early career as a wholesaler and the journey that led you to make the career pivot to becoming a financial advisor.
All right. That's a big topic. So I would break up my career into four chapters. The first chapter was working with a family wealth management team that was not my family. That was my internship and first job out of college. It's where I think I fell in love with the client meeting aspect of the job. Because of the family dynamics and my own personal goals, I knew that I wouldn't be able to get there as quick with them. And the more interaction I had with wholesalers, it became clearer to me that was a path I could potentially be successful at. My dad was a pharmaceutical sales rep. My uncles kind of worked out of their car in various jobs like that. So the idea of being able to do a similar job in finance was intriguing to me. I had no interest in getting my CFA. I didn't want to take out student loans for an MBA. So the wholesaling path, I felt like, was the straightest line to my own financial goals, which was the focus at the time. So I went to Eaton Vance as an internal wholesaler. That was kind of like a Hunger Games sales desk with a bunch of people under the age of 30, a portion of those people competing for external promotions. In my late 20s, I was able to get the Houston, Texas territory. So I was dating my wife at the time. She got into grad school. I just got the job. We did 18 months long distance, and my territory was from El Paso, Texas to New Orleans, Louisiana. And my goal was to meet with as many financial advisors in that region. And I ended up, over time, it was hard, but being pretty good at the job. I increased sales and revenue in the territory, and I reached my own personal financial goals. And my wife and I were able to take care of a few things and get our foundation in order to make a long story short, and this was not as clear then as it is now, it became clear to me that if my only way of measuring my career success and personal success was the size of a paycheck, that if the paycheck changes, or if the job changes, meaning becomes a lot harder for the same dollar, then that has an immediate impact on my, essentially, like my well-being. And that started to happen. I also realized that my scorecard of how I judged myself was different than maybe other people. So the people on stage at the end of the year that won the awards were incredibly talented and likely the hardest workers. But I felt like to be in the 1% of wholesalers, you could not be in the 1% in other areas of life. And I wasn't willing to do that. So I started, and I knew that like there was never going to be a corporation that said, okay, we're going to give out an award for the guy who had the most sales with the least amount of meetings, or the most sales with the least amount of nights in a hotel room. But I started to think that way, efficiency, profitability, and creating this scorecard that worked for myself, my wife, and our family. And just to answer your question directly, it became clear that the only way I was going to be able to judge myself on a scorecard that I created was to become a business owner. So that's what led to the advisor journey. We can talk about a little bit maybe how I got from wholesaler to advisor, but that's in a nutshell. That took 7 years to figure that out. That's what happened.
That even that 7 years, that's literally a lifetime for a lot of people. I think wholesaling is one of the toughest jobs out there. I did it for several years myself. It also can be one of the most rewarding if you are a people person and you like to kind of hear things and bounce ideas off people. But being able to kind of figure that out, especially spending a year and a half on your own down in Houston, I'm sure was quite the time. Want to hear, since you did have that time as a wholesaler, you did have the ability to talk to all of those advisors from El Paso to New Orleans, and that is quite a stretch. Want to hear, is there any specific thing that stuck out with you and helped shape your perspective and the approach you take with your clients now?
So Eaton Vance was channelized, I think they still are, which means that I covered a certain type of firm in that area. So I was on the independent side. But the definition of independent in the broker-dealer world is a broad spectrum. So I saw a lot of different advisors, from someone in a bank to someone at U.S. Trust to then all, everything in between. And there were advisors that had small one-man shop businesses. And then there were advisors that were turning their practices into corporations and buying practices all over the country. I already had the mindset at the time that I was probably going to end up back on that side. So I think I just asked more questions and paid more attention because I was selfishly interested in the answers. And what I was most drawn to were the smaller businesses, the boutique businesses, the ones that had unique niches. Not necessarily, I respected the ones that were building into huge businesses, but it wasn't necessarily what I was most drawn to. It's also what I have interest in outside of our industry. So if you think about those restaurants in your town that have maybe two locations and everyone loves them and they've been around for 20 years, or a boutique hotel, or a small high-end construction company that isn't regional based, isn't nationwide, I started to become really interested in those mid-size firms with 12 or fewer employees. They were very clear about who they served. They did it very well, but they were also not working 80 hours a week and they were going home to their families. So that is what shaped what my goal became for what I was looking for and wanted to build. And because I had that experience, I think a lot of advisors, maybe it takes half their career to figure out what they actually want out of the job. I was able to go into it knowing what I was looking for.
Right, I think that's huge. I think one of the things that being a wholesaler, you really get to kind of, whether even if it's single channel or multi-channel, you get to have an hourglass window view into a lot of different practices and how they operate. And one of the things that I've talked to friends about, and we've talked to a couple of advisors who have been wholesalers before, that always intrigues me is that when you're wholesaling, how rough the job is, the hotel nights, the different places, the fast food, the everything else, the meeting with different personalities and sometimes egos. But is there one thing, there's typically at least one that sticks out in your mind as being a lot harder than you initially kind of anticipated? So you're on the wholesaling side and you're kind of talking to all the advisors and you're like, I think maybe I could do that. Like that. I'm thinking in the back of my head, I'm collecting notes, we're thinking about, I'm going, yeah, one of these days I can do that. And all of a sudden you get in that seat and you're like, oh, this is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Two things. So first up is just when you're in a job where you're in it, I would say most people are in the wholesaling job because of the money aspect. Now you do get to talk to people. You have some freedom working out of your car. You have the ability to potentially golf, fish, ski with clients. When you sign up, you can't make a lateral move to an advisor position. So when you voluntarily sign up for, in my case, a 60 to 70% pay cut, mentally, even if you're prepared, even if you had an advisor, even if you did ran all the numbers, talked to every mentor that you had, it is still really tough to do that. That's my answer on the personal side. On the job side, I think I took for granted, and I don't know if this is sounds obvious, but when you walk into an office as a wholesaler or a big office with a lot of advisors, everyone in that office knows why you're there. It's not a surprise when you bring up what your agenda is for that day. When you leave that world, and all of a sudden, your clients become anyone that you meet and anyone in the country, including neighbors, friends, and family. It is tougher to, in my opinion, I think some people are obviously incredibly gifted at it. It is tougher to turn situations like that into a business conversation. And I definitely didn't appreciate that at the time, that I was coming in, like, I'm really good at relationship building, sales. I have a proven track record, but it's different when a company is putting your prospects in four walls and you're walking in and everyone knows why you're there. So I think that's probably my best answer to the question.
It's a good one. I think I hadn't thought of that before or heard that one, because I think that definitely can be awkward. And again, push somebody out of further out of their comfort zone. But would love to hear, is there one thing that, and maybe there isn't, that stuck out when you talk to an advisor, you're like, oh, I think I want to incorporate the way they do that when I'm dealing with my clients? Or is it more kind of an amalgamation, just a people?
It's a combination of the buildup of little tidbits of information over time. I also, when you're wholesaling, you're in the car a lot. I think I listen to every Michael Kitsis interview podcast, which also helped me build this framework, language, foundation of what my view of the financial advisor job is and who I was drawn to. Answer your question specifically, and this may not, but there was this differentiation in my mind of advisors who were smart and advisors who were intelligent. The highly, highly intelligent advisors, in my opinion, made the job more complicated than it needed to be, focused on areas that maybe the end client didn't care about as much, were hyper-confident in their abilities to build portfolios and predict market outcomes, which is not what I was drawn to. The advisors that were smart, emotionally intelligent, relationship-based, that's more my style and the type of practice and client relationship that I wanted to have.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I've heard that from other people. There's definitely, I think, with the growing specialization that you've seen, not just in advisors, but just in the whole financial community as a whole, there's definitely kind of a shift, I think, to becoming more emotionally intelligent with your clients and then being able to pick those services on the back end and work with that.
Correct. You have to have the technical skills, but I don't think that's enough to be a successful advisor.
But being agreed, I think if you're going to grow the practice, you definitely grow your business. You definitely need to have that emotional side as well. So one of the things we're switching, kind of keeping on that emotional theme, the one we spoke earlier this week, you mentioned that you like to use your parents as an example of how when you're working with retirees and how you're encouraging them to fly first class, which is something that I was like, it kind of stuck with me throughout my, since our previous call. And I'm like, I like that. I would love to hear more about how you're turning these lifelong savers, i.e. like your parents, into spenders in retirement.
First off, I think when people hear spending can mean different things to different people. It could be charitable goals. It could be gifting to family. It could also be just buying things that you have never purchased in your life. So if I were to sum this up in general, most of our clients, granted, we have a lot of different segments, but we have a lot of clients who are first generation millionaires. They worked at the same company for a long time. They built their wealth by just being diligent savers from a young age and getting the benefits of compound interest. Later in their career, they end up making more money, getting big promotions, but their lifestyle is kind of already set. So they end up saving even more money. Maybe they also get a pension, which wasn't necessarily in their plans when they started saving into their 401k. So now they have a situation where they have a nest egg that is enough to retire, but they also have guaranteed income sources coming in. So it's a really interesting and fun conversation to be able to sit down with an individual, a couple, or a family and say, your situation, lifestyle in retirement has the potential to be greater than what you've had the last 30 years, which a lot of people don't think will happen when they go into retirement. They're thinking about what can we remove? What can we cut out? How watered down can we get our expenses? And then we sit down with them. Specifically, I think me, I have this perspective because I've seen it with my parents for 30 years. I'll give one example with my parents that I share with clients. I grew up in a house where the way I learned how to shop for a car at a young age, so you get consumer reports, you pick the segment of the vehicle that you want, you circle the vehicles with the best maintenance and longevity track record, then you go purchase that vehicle, you get a car loan or you pay cash and you drive it for a number of years, then you give it to your son, in that case me, then I give it to my brother. And you never buy leather seats because that's a luxury that is not practical. To be able to tell my parents or ask them the question in retirement and say, would you ever want to drive another car? Like, what about just a reasonable German car? Yeah, but the maintenance or something like that. What if you leased it? And that was kind of a sacrilegious statement to make in the household I grew up with. Like Dave Ramsey wouldn't say, lease a car. To be able to tell a client that you lived a certain way for the last 30 years, and now if you'll get joy out of it, you can do things differently and give them permission to do it is incredibly rewarding. So I tell clients at every meeting that my biggest accomplishment as an advisor is getting my parents to lease a vehicle. And it leads to a lot of different conversations. Some clients, they also want to lease a car. Other people, it's a trip to Italy and you pay for the whole family to go. That's something they never would have done 20 years ago. Other people, it's, I want to gift money to my niece. So I'm guessing there'll be other follow-up questions, but that's the concept.
No, and that's a great concept. I think in previous podcasts, we talked to somebody who had, and they coined a term, the live it list. And I think that really, what you're speaking to really kind of brings that back to my mind, because you're enabling them or definitely kind of walking them through kind of that third phase of life and telling them you can do more. Go out and kind of spend and do that. I was going to ask you what in your mind is the most rewarding example of that, but it sounds to me like you already mentioned your parents one. Is there any other ones that kind of that stick out?
Yeah, I'll give a second one. We met with a client recently who had a great career, but like all of our clients, lived below their means. She, in particular, didn't have any children, but she had nieces and nephews who were really important to her. And I've asked all clients, me being the new partner at the firm, one of the questions that I asked, which I think I stole from Brendan Fraser, who's a advisor coach, LinkedIn presence, I asked them the question, I call it the 2010 test, but it basically says, Brian, if you had $20 million in the bank, and 10 years to live, what would you change? What would you continue doing? What would you start doing? And I really, you know, try to get out of people what their answers to that question would be. This person in particular had a list of projects around the house, and she mentioned, I would definitely help out my niece and nephew and their kids. Now, her plan was to leave her estate to them. At some point in the meeting, I just said, if we could show you that you could do these projects around the house, basically give yourself a raise in retirement. So you're just getting a raise and a bonus from your own money and help out your niece and nephew and their kids while you're living. So you get to see the benefit. And it's likely at the age where they need it the most. Would you be open? Would that be a productive conversation? And she said, absolutely. So we called her back in. We had this whole financial plan scenario. We showed her the projection of money left in scenario A, money left in scenario B, doing all these extra things. And I think within 5 minutes, we had all the necessary paperwork to make the changes and increase the paycheck and help out these other family members. As a wholesaler, you're not close enough to the end result to get that fulfillment and the reward. On the advisor side, it's one of the great parts about the job that you get to see very closely the impact that you're having. So that'd be an example.
And that's huge. I think you really, you get to see the benefit of kind of the whole workflow and all the hard work that's been put in by everybody. And I think that's got to be extremely rewarding.
It is. It's the best part about the job and the reason why I made the change.
Excellent. Well, let's lean a little bit more into that change. Essentially, you're the new guy at a firm. We've had clients that have been with the firm for over 10 years. What are some of the ways that you're trying to close that gap, the time gap, and build trust with those clients?
So in some cases, I mean, so Tim Martin, his name is on the door. He started the firm about 20 years ago, and some people have been with him since day one. Being the new partner, I think to answer, the only way you can build trust in a relationship is to genuinely do it, and it takes time. I think there are certain things that I've been trying to do to potentially speed up that process. So when you're new, you have to think about ways to demonstrate credibility, and especially demonstrate credibility in ways that I guess I'm good at or comfortable doing because of wholesaling. The video stuff, the speaking engagements are fairly normal and comfortable for me. So anytime we have an event, a client event, a virtual event, I try to be the one that's leading it to just get that extra face time. If you're only relying on 2 or 3 meetings a year with clients, it's going to take longer. I've also started a monthly video series where I pick a chart that I found interesting on a topic that most people are aware of, but don't necessarily understand. And I do a 3-minute video on the topic, and that goes out to all of our clients via email. The response has been pretty good to that. In client meetings, I try to bring up my upbringing and my parents. Because my parents are so similar to our clients, I feel like the more that I share stories about them, it helps give me that credibility and authenticity that they can, even though the folks I'm sitting across from are older, it makes things more relatable when they know that my life outside of work is pretty similar to theirs.
Well, one of the things that not everybody has, but I know you do, speaking with you previously, we learned that one of your strong suits is organization. And since you're on the independent side, Ed Martin, you have to think now about everything involved that goes, or everything that goes into running a successful business. How do you organize your time to be as efficient as possible?
So the organizational skills have been there since I was pretty young. I was born with it, but they've evolved on the career side of things. As a wholesaler, I felt like the only way to do the job and make it a little bit easier is to be organized. When I left there to get that bridge job with Ameriprise as the branch manager, that was really my first taste of the corporate world. I had someone I reported to who, in my mind, was the closest thing to an executive that I spoke to often. And the way he ran his calendar with his team was just super impressive to me. And this concept of a model week got ingrained in my head of basically having blocks on the calendar, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and sticking to that. I think based on the prior topics, you realize that I needed the control. You don't get that in the corporate world. So what I was able to do is bring the structure in the organization from the corporate world. But now as a business owner, I am 100% in charge of what's on the calendar. Meaning when you're in the corporate world, the calendar gets filled up with things before you put the things on there that you want on there. In my world now, the calendar is blank when I start the year. So the first thing I do is put on the personal side of the job or my personal side of life. So it's the days that I pick up the kids or drop off the kids. Then my gym times go in there. Then everything else gets built around that, not the other way around. So what I've landed on is Monday is team meeting, leadership day. So it's conversations with other team members. It's our group meetings. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is when we meet with clients and prospective clients. And then Fridays, I try to keep as open as possible. It could be networking. It could be free time. It could be thinking time. And then it's likely follow-up and preparation for the week ahead. We're still getting there, but I would say I'm 80% there. And the fact that I'm in control of my calendar is just such an important part of the job and just really helps me have it not feel like a job anymore because it's all my decision of what's on there.
That's great. And I think it definitely probably helps add a level of comfort to everybody in the office with not only yourself, but also the clients with you as well.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do is take that level of that predictability, those expectations, and translate that to the client experience. So if clients know when they come into each year what they can expect from us from a contact frequency, a meeting frequency, what the topics will be in those meetings, I think it leads to a better experience, a better relationship. But from a business owner standpoint, you also tend to get less inbound requests, reactive requests, because clients start to learn when they will hear from you and what topics will be discussed. And they start saving those questions for those meetings. So part of what I'm trying to do is improve the client experience, but at the same time, it also improves the employee and business owner experience as well.
Oh, that's great. Love to hear, are there any other areas of the business that you're focused on building or enhancing at Martin?
I think this is a case for a lot of advisory practices who go above and beyond from a planning standpoint. And if they've only been in the independent space, they can almost, I don't know if they think as highly of their business as they would if they were as aware of the competition as I was because I saw it as a wholesaler. So again, if you've done the wholesaler job, you've seen the spectrum, you've met hundreds of advisors, you quickly realize that if you had to refer one of your advisors in that territory to a family or friend, you're probably only going to refer less than 10% of the advisors that you come in contact with. If you've been in the independent side since the beginning, you're not sitting next to other advisors on a daily basis where you're saying, oh, I'm doing way more than that person, or I'm delivering way more value than that person. I think what I came in and noticed was the financial planning, the tax planning, the knowledge, the technical skills that Martin Capital Group had was far superior to, in my opinion, just for all the people that I've seen, than most of the advisors that I came in contact with. So I think I kind of gave myself the responsibility of how do we make sure that we're telling that story and getting credit for everything that we're doing? At the end of the day, if you do these 10 or 12 things for clients, but they aren't aware of it or aren't reminded of it, we're kind of missing some of the opportunity there. So a big part of my role has been, how do we communicate the great work that we're doing to make sure that we're getting credit for it and hopefully have clients realize that what they're getting from us is different than the majority of advisors out there.
And I'm sure it is. Without a doubt, I have one more question for you. At Harbor, we're firm believers in active management, though it is important to acknowledge every financial expert has their own unique perspective. From your experience, I guess, both on the wholesaling side and the advisory side, what is your take on active management and where have you observed it making the most significant difference?
So I think like a lot of things, the answer is probably in the middle. It's a combination. It's a balance. I feel like there's, if you've done the wholesaler job for whether it's internal or external for, let's say, a decade, you end up leaving that world going one or two ways. Either you are obsessed with the investment side of things, the story, the next great fund, where the manager came from, or you lean the other way, which you tend to believe that simple is better. There's a lot of people overcomplicating things. I'm leaning that way, but from an active passive standpoint, I think the answer is a combination. I always try to use analogies with clients that would resonate. It's like building a house and selecting materials. If the material you're selecting at different price points results in a better home, a higher quality home, a nicer home, then it's worth paying for. But if it doesn't have any impact to the quality of the home, the resale value of the home, then maybe you should make a different decision. So that's how I try to think about it.
Well said. Thank you for joining us on the Active Advisor podcast. How can people find you?
Thanks for having me. You can find me at martincapitalgroup.com and my LinkedIn page, which is Anthony Zanetti. I don't think there's too many others.
Thank you very much. Let me know. I want to give you a deep breath now because we're going to go into the 60 seconds with Anthony Zanetti. Let me know when you're ready.
Ready.
Nickname.
Z.
Hobby.
Kids. If there's any time. Fitness.
Profession if you weren't in finance.
Architect.
Pickleball or hockey. Pick one.
Now, close to 40. Pickleball.
Messy desk or clean desk.
Clean.
What's the best professional advice you've ever received?
Start big and go small.
If you could eat only one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Pasta with meat in it.
Biggest risk you've ever taken.
Leaving a job where I was doing well and well rewarded financially for something that was different.
What never fails to make you laugh?
Watching The Office with my wife.
What's something you wish you were better at?
Golf.
What piece of advice would you give your younger self?
Trust your gut.
What's one question you think all clients should ask their financial advisor?
Do you have an investment portfolio and do you manage it the exact same way that you're going to manage our money?
Most rewarding part of the job?
Helping turn lifelong savers into spenders in retirement.
Favorite way to get active?
Go to the gym before my family wakes up.
Whether you're a seasoned advisor or just getting started, the Active Advisor brought to you by Harbor Capital offers professional insights for the financial advisor community. Visit us at harborcapital.com to learn more. And don't forget to subscribe to the Active Advisor on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts to stay up to date on investment trends, tried and tested research methods, and what your industry peers are up to. From all of us at Harbor Capital, thanks for tuning in.
And now for important disclosures. This material is for informational purposes and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or adopt any investment strategy. The opinions expressed are as of 11th of March 2024 and are subject to change. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the views of Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. The information and opinions contained in this material are derived from proprietary and non-proprietary sources deemed by Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. to be reliable and are not necessarily all-inclusive and are not guaranteed as to accuracy. This material may contain forward-looking information that is not purely historical in nature. Such information may include, among other things, projections and forecasts. There is no guarantee that any of these views will come to pass. This material may not be representative of the experience of other individuals. Reliance upon information in this material is at the sole discretion of the viewer. This material is not legal, tax, or accounting advice. Please consult with a qualified professional for this type of advice. Investing involves risk, including the risk of loss. Stock markets are volatile and equity values can decline significantly in response to adverse issuer, political, regulatory, market, and economic conditions. Fixed income investments are affected by interest rate changes and the creditworthiness of issuers. As interest rates rise, the values of fixed income securities are likely to decrease. Specific companies and issuers are mentioned for educational purposes only and should not be deemed a recommendation to buy or sell any securities. Any companies mentioned do not necessarily represent current or future holdings of any investment products. Harbor Capital Advisors Inc. does and may seek to do business with companies covered in this podcast. As a result, listeners should be aware that the firm may have a conflict of interest that could affect the objectivity of this podcast. This material is prepared by Harbor Capital Advisors Inc. Harbor Capital Advisors Inc. is not affiliated with Mardin Capital Group. All trademarks or product names mentioned herein are the property of their respective owners. Copyright 2023 Harbor Capital Advisors Inc. All rights reserved.